Welcome back, everyone, to the channel. Tonight's terrifying story is about this guy named Casey, who meets this girl at an outing. They go out to a movie. Now, this is dating back to the 80s when Star Wars Return of the Jedi was in theaters. And after a casual conversation after the film, she tells about her experience as a camp counselor where someone had gone missing that has traumatized her, and that's why she's not superly into scary movies. Come to find out, after showing him a picture of the girl in the picture that had disappeared, it was his best friend's sister who had moved away in the past. He had no idea that she had disappeared. So immediately he contacts his friend Jimmy, and they go out to search for his missing sister. And what they come across was something far more horrifying. Now let's get spooky. It was a warm night as I parked near the multiplex located inside the Forest Valley Mall. The weather was perfect, not a cloud in the bright blue sky, which was slowly fading into a deep purple with splashes of red. Up ahead, the mall's gleaming white facade loomed over the horizon. Fireflies drifted through the air and dotted the parking lot with glowing yellow specks. "Ready to go?" I asked Erica.
"Sure thing, Casey."
She smiled at me and I tried to act like it didn't make my insides do backflips. Erica was one of the most beautiful women I had ever seen. Long brown hair, piercing blue eyes, a beautiful smile, and perfect golden skin. She was dressed casually, but nicely in a red blouse and classy jeans. I nodded and we both got out of my car, a beige 1981 Chevy Malibu, and headed towards the massive glass double doors facing the parking lot, which was packed with cars. When we stepped inside, I was immediately hit with the flawless temperature that was just cool enough, the neatly soothing background music, and the oddly calming smell of suburban retail. We strode past the massive fountain splashing in the atrium, the escalator leading the way to the second floor, the food court with the vendors' names spelled out in neon lights, and walked towards the theater, which was located by Sears, one of the anchor stores. When we passed the fountain, the pennies lying at the bottom gleamed in the fading daylight. As our shoes clicked quietly on the white tile floor, you could feel that it was a Friday night. The air crackled with that unique mix of adrenaline and excitement that only a Friday night in summer creates. Toys R Us was jam-packed with overexcited kids and their frazzled parents, while the older kids were busy down at Sam Goody's or greedily gulping down drinks from Orange Julius. School had just let out, and no matter what your age was, it's a reason to celebrate. Since Memorial Day had come and gone again, summer was here. It wasn't long before we arrived at the theater. The lines stretching out in front meant that we weren't the only ones who wanted to see Return of the Jedi, which was spelled out on the marquee in tall black letters. Erica and I got in line, which hummed with a pleasant buzz of chit-chat, the usual inconsequential stuff you talk about in lines anywhere. I'd been looking forward to seeing this movie since 1980, and now that it was here, I could hardly believe it. I could also hardly believe what had happened in the world since 1980 either, or since the first Star Wars film came out in 1977 for that matter. But I guess that's the entire point. No matter what happens, Star Wars is always there for you, waiting to be picked up and experienced. Just like no matter how cold and dark a winter is, summer always comes. Standing there amidst the sea of blue and purple neon lights of the mall, I was on top of the world. There's something inherently nostalgic about summer. Perhaps it's because summer itself is so memorable. Summer sears itself in memory with electric blue skies, brilliant white sand, and grass so green it doesn't look real. With long, heady days and balmy nights, summer literally sears your flesh if you don't slather on enough sunscreen. Or maybe it's because summer is irretrievably connected to memories we all have about summer vacations when we were young. The vacations we took and the fun we had, going to the movies to see the latest summer blockbuster. There's a reason a summer romance is something special. I've never heard anyone talk with longing about a spring romance or a winter romance. There's no denying summer is a magical time of year. The last summer before you went off to high school or college is a lot like the last Halloween you went trick-or-treating. There were good times before it and good times after it, but there's no denying that things were different after. Summer is also the most euphoric of seasons. That roar of energy you feel when school lets out, the giant shimmering promise of tomorrow being all your own. The only assignment for summer is to get out, enjoy every day, and make it count. It's practically in our blood as Americans to cherish summer, as the country was created during the hot, sticky summer of 1776. Although this summer my assignment was getting to know Erica Ashton, I'd met her last week at a Memorial Day cookout at my friend Drew's house, and I knew the instant I saw her that I had to go talk to her. Approaching her, I can't remember the last time I was that nervous about anything. Even though she was sitting outside by the pool while eating a hamburger and some potato salad, she may as well have been on another planet from me. But when she started talking, Erica was so friendly and warm that it put even a nervous wreck like me at ease. I was shocked at how much we had in common. And when I mentioned I wanted to see this movie, she mentioned that she did as well. And despite the nagging voice in my head saying that she would never come with me, I went through and asked. To my eternal surprise, Erica said yes. Quite frankly, that's more surreal to me than any science fiction movie. The lines steadily moved up until it was our turn and we got two tickets for the 9 p.m. showing. Let's grab seats first and once that's over, we'll head to the snack bar. She nodded.
Good idea.
We walked past the ticket booths, the snack bar, and the restrooms before we entered our theater, which was theater number 3. We managed to find two seats in the middle on the left section. Row 12 still had two free aisle seats, which I was happy about. Which one do you prefer? I gestured towards the chairs.
Doesn't matter to me.
Then I'll take the aisle seat. I stood back and let her slide in before I sat down beside her and checked my watch. It was 8:45, 15 minutes to showtime. The buzz of excitement was starting to fill the theater, which was slowly filling up. From the way it looked so far, I suspected we'd have a full house, which made me happy. This was the kind of movie you needed to see with a packed theater. Just like sports fans, movie fans speak a second language and feed off of each other's excitement. Want some snacks? I turned to Erica. I'm planning on getting a medium popcorn. Don't worry, I'll share. She laughed.
I promise I won't sneak at all when you aren't looking. I'll take a Coke.
Coming right up, try not to let anyone steal our seats.
No, I'm totally gonna be a pushover and let them just kick us out of our seats.
Funny. Be right back. I walked back into the lobby and headed towards the purple concession stand, the line for which was small, but the area was humming with activity. The area was filled with the buttery smell of fresh popcorn and the sounds of people talking, the popcorn popping, and the cash register clanging away. Two Cokes and a medium popcorn, I ordered when it was my turn at the register.
$5,
the teenage guy manning the front said. Like the other employees, he was dressed in a red vest with a silver name tag clipped to it. After making change, he filled two paper cups with soda and placed them on the counter before turning to fill a paper bag with popcorn. He eventually placed the bag on the counter with the drinks.
Would you like a drink holder for these?
Please. I nodded, and he quickly put both drinks in a cardboard container before I grabbed it and the popcorn and headed back to my seat.
Thanks,
Erica said as I handed her a Coke and sat back down. The chair creaked slightly as I sat.
No problem.
As soon as I sat back down in my seat, I started munching on popcorn. It doesn't matter if the movie is on or not. Popcorn needs to be eaten fresh, otherwise it gets stale. For the last few minutes, the anticipation in the room built up, and the minutes the lights on the deep red walls went out, the crowd started to cheer. I didn't blame them one bit. No matter how many times you see it, there is nothing like it when a screen goes from blank to a full-fledged picture in the blink of an eye. Everyone is instantly a kid again. For the next few hours, Erica and I experienced the final of the great cinema event of our era. Once the ending credits came on, the entire theater, which included the two of us, burst into applause and gave the movie a standing ovation. As I clapped along with everyone else, I smiled with both a sense of happiness and a touch of sadness. I thought of who I had been when the first Star Wars came out, and who I'd gone with, my best friend Jimmy and his siblings. Jimmy and his family had moved away, and while I still had his address, we lost touch, but I thought of him often. I silently hoped he was somewhere having as much fun watching this movie as I was. I need to use the restroom before we leave, I told Erica as we made our way to the exit.
Me too. I'll wait for you near the snack bar.
Sounds good. When I was done, I found Erica where she said she'd be. By now, the theater had quieted down and the mood was much mellower than when we had arrived. Two uniformed ushers were sweeping the floors while patrons were steadily trickling out of the mall. We made our way out in relative quiet until we reached the front doors we came in through.
Thanks for inviting me. I really enjoyed the movie,
Erica said as we stepped outside and walked to the car. It was chillier now, and the light breeze gently shook the few trees that were around. I enjoyed it too, and I'm really glad you came with me. I'm thrilled you invited me. Definitely one of the better summer memories I've had recently. Well, I'm glad you had a good time, but I'm sorry to hear you've had a rough go of it recently.
Oh no, don't worry about it, Casey.
She paused while we both got in my car.
I was just thinking out loud.
It happens. I slammed my door shut and started the car. I'm just really glad that Donna made me come to the Memorial Day cookout.
Me too, I laughed.
Without saying a word, she reached over and quickly gave my hand an affectionate squeeze, a gesture I returned. Did you not want to come? Believe me, I get Ray can be a bit over the top at times.
He can. He can, but that wasn't it at all. Last summer, something bad went down at a summer camp I was a counselor at.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Thank you. Believe me, there was no guy in a hockey mask or anything.
Can you watch those movies after what happened?
Oh, absolutely. Not a problem at all. For starters, I know it's not real. The only one that's even remotely realistic is the first Friday the 13th.
Right.
But aside from that, what happened at Camp Chestnut bore no resemblance to the movies at all. That didn't stop people from telling campfire stories about it, but it's not what happened.
Of course not. Do you mind me asking what did happen? Right at that moment, I passed a streetlight, and the orange light briefly illuminated her face. She smiled a wry, knowing, sad smile.
Not at all. I wouldn't have brought it up if I didn't want to talk about it. One of the counselors went missing one night. It was towards the end of camp, right before Labor Day. Everyone went to bed one night, and the next morning, we found that Megan had just vanished. There was no sign of struggle, no sign of an intruder, no nothing. They searched the lake and found nothing there either. Since there was nothing for the police to go on, the search was over fast. Megan's parents hired a private investigator, and even he couldn't find anything.
That's wild.
It sure was. The camp hadn't done anything wrong, but that didn't stop it from being shut down immediately. Fortunately, camp was due to let out in a few days anyway, so it's not like the whole thing went down and ruined the kids' whole summer. But still, it shook the rest of us up pretty bad.
I'm sure it did.
Megan was the kind of girl who never met a stranger. In all the time I was there, I never heard her say a bad word about anyone. She was responsible, caring, and hilariously funny. That's one reason why it shook us up so bad. There are a few counselors there who wouldn't have shocked me one bit if something happened to them. Megan was not one of them.
I could imagine. That's awful. Where's this Camp Chestnut at?
Way down on the south side of the state, past Philadelphia and close to Maryland.
Wild.
Sure was.
Erica added as I pulled up in front of her house, which was only a 5-minute drive from the mall.
Thanks again for tonight. I had a really nice time.
You're welcome. I'm really happy you came.
Without saying another word, she leaned in and kissed me on the lips. Her lips were beyond soft and gentle. But before I knew it, she pulled away with a knowing smile.
And thank you for that as well.
My pleasure.
She smiled again before we both got out of the car. I stood there with my hands in my pockets as she dug through her purse for what I assumed were her keys.
Do you want to see what Megan looked like? She asked without looking up.
Sure.
She pulled out a Polaroid and handed it to me. The photo showed a dozen people standing in front of a stunning lake on a beautiful summer day. I could practically feel the humidity in the photo. Everyone in the shot was wearing blue shorts and white shirts with blue lettering that spelled out Camp Chestnut. That's her. She pointed to the far left side of the picture. When I saw who she was pointing to, I felt like I had just been sucker punched. The person in that photo was a little bit older and a lot taller than when I had last saw her, but I knew exactly who she was. Megan Cartwright, my old friend Jimmy's sister. I stood there silently as I took the piece of information in. Jimmy's sister, who I'd spent time with in countless family cookouts, holidays, and even other possible events, had just vanished one day,
and no one had ever said a word to me about it. Erica could tell something was up, so I swallowed hard and told her what was going on. She too stood there speechless when the realization washed over her.
"What are you gonna do?"
she asked after what seemed like a long time. "I don't know. I guess I'll give Jimmy a call."
"That's a good idea."
Erica nodded before we called it a night with a hug that seemed to last both an eternity and no time at all. On the way home, the radio was nothing but indecipherable white noise as I was alone with my thoughts. The car seemed to be on autopilot as I wove up and down the streets and finally parked in my driveway. My house was dark as my parents were already asleep for the night. It was only 10, so it wasn't too late. I knew from experience that Jimmy stayed up late like I did. We'd spend countless nights up late watching movies at the Twilight Drive-In. Careful not to make too much noise as I came in and switched on a few lights, I crept over to the kitchen and grabbed the address book where we kept all the contact information for family, friends, and everyone in between. Once Jimmy's info was in front of me, I dialed the number. I stood there awkwardly as the phone rang. I had no idea what to say if anyone even picked up the phone. But on the fifth ring, someone answered.
"Hello?"
A slightly out of breath male voice answered.
"Jimmy?"
I heard myself ask.
"Yes?"
he said in a hesitant voice.
"It's Casey."
"Casey? Casey Flanagan?"
"That's right."
"Well, this is a surprise." His voice was a lot warmer than it had been a few seconds ago.
"Been a long time."
"It sure has. How are you?"
"I'm good. It's just good to hear from you. But I'm more than a little curious as to why you're calling me."
"Of course. Well, I just got back from a date. And the girl that I was with said she was a counselor at the same camp your sister went missing at. Camp Chestnut. I'm so sorry, Jimmy." He was silent for a few moments.
"Mind if I ask you the girl's name?"
"Erica?"
"Always liked her. Although I have to admit, I'm shocked she went out with you."
"You and me both. But I'm truly sorry to hear about your sister."
"Thanks. It was rough for a while, but we're doing better now. The worst part about it is not knowing what happened. No one has a clue."
"I'm sure."
"But we haven't given up looking. My family and a few others have been doing our own detective work, and we have a place to check out in the next few days. It's an island off the coast of the Carolinas. You're welcome to join us. I'd really like to see you again. For old time's sake. We're even going to be taking my dad's boat. Remember it?"
"Do I ever. Remember the time he took us out fishing and we couldn't catch so much as a piece of seaweed, so we spent the rest of the trip home watching Scooby-Doo?"
"Absolutely. So will I see you in a few days?"
"Yes. Looking forward to seeing you again."
"You too. And Casey?"
"Thanks for joining us. And thanks even more for calling."
"You're welcome.
Here's where to meet us at," he added before he listed the address and time. It was a Maryland boat harbor.
"See you then. Good night."
"Good night, Jimmy." I hung up the phone and stared out the back porch. I was really going to go on a search party to find my old friend's missing sister. Years ago, we would have invented some sort of game like this. Now it was all too real. After a drink of water, I went to bed and slept soundly. I woke up the next morning to the smell of eggs and bacon, and while I ate with my parents, I told them about what I had discovered and how I would be joining the search party in a few days.
My parents were shocked at the news, but they were supportive of me joining the effort to help. The day of searching for Megan arrived sooner than I expected. Once I grabbed a flashlight and some other gear, I was heading down the road to the tail end of Maryland. The sun gleamed high in the sky as I eased through woods and weaved down highways. It was stiflingly hot by the time I arrived at the location the boat was anchored at. It was late afternoon, and the salty sea air was sticky and humid. Seagulls squawked loudly overhead as they circled for food and the waves lapped against the various boats docked at the harbor. Jimmy was there to greet me the minute that I parked my car. Despite my sunglasses, I had to shield my eyes from the sun to see him. He looked good. He had put on some muscle since I last saw him, and he was a bit taller than I remembered. But despite that, he still looked like my old friend. He immediately ambled over for a hug that I swear made my shoulders pop. "Take it easy, son. We need Casey to be able to lift a flashlight," I heard his father say with his usual dry sense of humor. "Mr. Cartwright," I turned to face him and held out my hand to shake. "Good to see you again."
"You too, Casey. Always liked you. Thanks for coming to help us."
Mr. Cartwright was a bit grayer and a bit bulkier than the last time I saw him, but he still had the same mustache and beard he had always had.
"Sure thing, glad to help."
Then Mr. Cartwright took a moment to introduce me to the other four men joining the search party. Simon Boncroft, Jim O'Malley, Pete Jennings, and Mitch Portman were old family friends and had joined the Cartwrights on numerous outings like this to find Megan, or whatever had happened to her. "We're going to Green Cove. It's just off the coast of the Carolinas. We should be there in a few hours. There's plenty of food and entertainment aboard, so settle in and enjoy the ride, gentlemen." Mr. Cartwright clapped his hands and led us aboard his massive boat, which was unsurprisingly named Megan. There was indeed plenty of food laid out in the sitting room, which was equipped with a TV and radio. Once we were all settled in, Mr. Cartwright went up to start the boat and steer us out to open water. The rest of us grabbed paper plates and loaded them up with potato chips, pretzels, several kinds of dips, and some cheesy potato casserole that we ate while we debated about what movie to watch. I was pleased when we decided on Raiders of the Lost Ark. Once we popped it in the VCR next to the TV, we all settled down on couches and relaxed as we cruised down south on the open water. Sipping soda and eating chips while watching one of my favorite movies made me forget about what we were up to, which I suspected was the whole point. I had no doubt this was a way for them to decompress and relax despite everything. We arrived off the coast of the Carolinas just as the movie was ending. Green Cove was stunning. The views of the water around it were spectacular, and the sand looked soft and comforting. I could easily see myself curled up there with a paperback for the afternoon. The beach was dotted with palm trees, and there was a pleasant breeze that made them all flutter in a calming rhythm. But something was off about Green Cove. By the looks of it, the island was deserted. Everything was unnaturally still. But that didn't make sense, since I could see plenty of small boats parked on the shore. So where did all the people go?
"Do you see the boats, Mr. Cartwright?"
"Sure do, Casey,"
he said before he grabbed a pair of binoculars and peered through them. "There are people there, or there were. The question is, what happened?"
"What do we do, Dad?" Jimmy asked.
He thought for a moment. "Son, you and Casey stay on the boat and keep watch with Pete and Mitch. Jim and Simon, you two come with me to look around."
The men all nodded and grabbed their gear before going to shore. Pete and Mitch stood at the top deck with Jimmy and me, and we watched as they set foot on the island. Jimmy's dad and the other two had walkie-talkies with them, so we could contact them if need be. But it was too quiet. Every moment they were gone felt painfully drawn out. I couldn't help but think about how, if there were people out there, they would have heard us approach in the boat and knew exactly where we were. I did the best I could to push those thoughts out of my head as we waited. We had several pairs of binoculars that we took turns passing around, and we had been keeping watch for about 15 minutes when static suddenly started coming from the walkie-talkies and they crackled to life.
"Get the boat started and ready to go immediately. We're getting out of here,"
was all Mr. Cartwright said before the walkie-talkie went silent again. We all stood there, unsure of what to do. But within moments, Jimmy's dad and the others bursted out of the greenery, sprinting towards the boat and climbed aboard. Without pausing to take a breath, Mr. Cartwright started the boat and we sped out of there. The water splashed behind us as we peeled away from the island and went out to sea. But as we pulled away from shore, Pete and I looked behind us and saw the shape of someone watching us leave. From that distance, I couldn't make out much, but I could tell they were wearing a burlap sack with eye holes cut in it as a mask. The figure just stood there and watched us as well. There is absolutely no way to confirm this, but I felt the figure's eyes on me as the boat roared away. I had no idea what was going on, but I knew something was deeply wrong, and I couldn't wait to be far away from here. I wasn't the only one either, because Jimmy's dad was going way faster than before, and the water splashed around us with a vengeance. I had to hold on to my seat to make sure I didn't fall out of it, but I wasn't complaining. As he piloted the boat, Jimmy's dad was also radioing for help. I could only make out a few words, but I would find out later what happened, as everyone who had left the boat was just sitting there in complete shock. That frightened me more than anything, and I was dying to know what they had found or what had happened. But nothing could prepare me for the story when it was finally told to me several hours later. When they came ashore, Jimmy's dad and the other two had found bodies strung up in trees and several heads impaled on spikes, with no sign of any human life around. By the time the cops were able to arrive and search the island, there was no trace of anyone there either. Nor was there any sign of Jimmy's sister. The only noteworthy thing the cops found on the island was the wreckage of a boat. It was an old wooden craft, and it had deep scratches made on both the outside and the inside. When analyzed, tests showed that they had been made by an animal, more specifically a wolf. Things got even creepier when they found the bodies the severed heads had been attached to inside the boat. They were not only also covered with similar scratches to the boat, the coroner declared the cause of death to be made by an animal attack, and the bite marks on the bodies were also matched as a large wolf. When the story was finished, I stood there in complete shock. I'd been a lifelong horror movie fan and watcher of crime shows, but this felt beyond unnatural. Everyone involved, but especially Mr. Cartwright, was in complete shock. The situation had been crazy to begin with, but this was beyond anyone's wildest imagination. What had they found? What had we all inadvertently stumbled into? The police were just as shocked as we were. Eventually, they managed to connect what they had found to be several missing persons cases spanning several states in the Northeast and the South. But that's all they could do because there was absolutely no leads they could investigate.
Things eventually calmed down after that, and life went on. Erica and I went on a few more dates, and things steadily got more serious. I had practically forgotten about that day on the boat when we went to see Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom almost exactly 1 year later. Personally, I prefer Raiders of the Lost Ark, but Erica absolutely loved it. Jimmy, who had come along on a double date with his girlfriend Juliana, loved it as well, while Juliana agreed with me. Once we left the movie, we went to a local pizza place for dinner before we grabbed some ice cream at the place next door. It was a wonderful evening that we ended up at my house where Jimmy was due to spend the night. If there was one positive thing that came out of this awful situation, it was that Jimmy and I rekindled our friendship. Jimmy fell asleep quicker than I did, and I had to get up to grab a drink of water in the middle of the night. Once I grabbed my drink, I stood in the patio while looking out over our backyard. I was just about to head back to bed when I saw it. A shadow looking out at me from the tree line where our property ended. At first, I wasn't sure I saw it, but when I took a closer look, there was no mistaking it was there. My stomach clenched as I wondered what I was looking at. My eyes frantically tried to figure out what was there in the dim nighttime light. Moments later, I realized I was looking at what looked like a giant wolf's head. I thought it was a joke for a second, but if it was a joke, it was the best illusion I had ever seen. The wolf was the most authentic looking I had ever seen, practically cinema effects worthy. But it was those eyes that convinced me that it was no joke. They looked at me with a restrained knowing that it was frighteningly real. And as my eyes adjusted, I saw it was attached to what looked like a giant humanoid body covered with matching fur. I had no idea how big it was, but even from this angle it looked huge. For what seemed like an eternity, I just stood there, watching the giant wolf watch me. It stood there equally still, not moving or doing anything besides studying me. Then, out of nowhere, it opens its massive jaws in a fang-bearing gesture that I could only stand there and watch. And in the blink of an eye, it leapt out from where it was hiding and went over the hedge and into the nearby woods. I shook my head as if to clear my mind. The whole thing seemed like a dream. I eventually walked back to my bedroom and drifted off to a restless sleep hours later. After breakfast, I told Jimmy what I had seen. He didn't know what to make of it either. What could I do besides just wonder and speculate? Eventually, the conversation moved on to what movie we should see next. Ghostbusters or Gremlins? He asked. I had to stifle a laugh. Ghostbusters. Jimmy stared at me for a moment before he realized what he had just asked. Oh yeah, good point. So Ghostbusters was our next movie outing, and it was a blast.